Mr. Speaker, following the passage of Hurricane Thomas in October 2010, a number of culverts, including one located on the Cassis Grizzly Highway in the vicinity of Bonte, have shown signs of failure. Subsequently, as a result of rain, or the incessant rain, the outlet of one of the culverts has subsided, leaving a depression on the shoulder northbound. To ensure safety of the motoring public, traffic flows have been reduced to a single lane. The Ministry of Infrastructure is presently working to reinstate the stability of the shoulder so as to restore the two-way flow of traffic at the earliest, if the weather permits. No significant danger has presented itself. Designs for a replacement culvert are completed, and the ministry is moving hastily to address the problem as a priority. A design review for the bridge, for a new bridge design, has commenced. On completion of the exercise, a contractor will be selected to undertake the work. And because of the urgency of the situation, the contractor will have to be selected by direct purchase. The motoring public is advised to proceed with caution on that portion of the road. In addition, the ministry has received a report from NEMO that a landslide has occurred today, May 11th, along the Sandife Road in Taro, in the constituency of Cassis Southeast. The technical team in the ministry is investigating the situation to inform on the necessary intervention to restore the area. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise to support the policy as indicated by the Honorable Prime Minister in his policy statement on Tuesday. But, Mr. Speaker, we have to look at that policy in terms of the environment in which we are operating. An environment, Mr. Speaker, where we have inherited a fiscal deficit, and in an environment in which the government pronounced a growth rate that was non-existent, a growth rate that did not exist. The question is, Mr. Speaker, where did that figure for the growth rate come from? Mr. Speaker, I'm not surprised. That is what characterized government in the last 5 years. Blame. Blame somebody. Blame. Failure to take responsibility for action. And that has continued even when the government, the former government, finds itself in opposition. Mr. Speaker, there are different political philosophies that exist. The philosopher Hobbes, Mr. Speaker, he sought to discover rational principles based on harmony and peace, which form the basis of a society. The philosopher Hegel, he spoke of a political community where its members share certain ethical ideals and are united by a generally accepted system of social morality. And the philosopher, the Minister of Finance, speaks of offering hope, giving us courage, a call to action, the courage to act. This political philosophy, Mr. Speaker, is based on optimism, is based on bringing out the best of the people of St. Lucia. Is based on calling the sectors together, the private sector, the public sector, the unions, the youth, to come together to develop the country. That is the philosophy of the Prime Minister. And that philosophy, Mr. Speaker, will lead to the better days that we promise the people of St. Lucia. And some of them want to make a mockery of the better days. But we were clear. We were clear in our philosophy. We were clear when we spoke of the better days. And, Mr. Speaker, I want to make a document of the House, our blueprint for growth. It is called Building a Better St. Lucia, and it's the manifesto of the St. Lucia Labour Party for the 2011 election. Let me make a document of the House. And on page 3, Mr. Speaker, the party states clearly that the better days will not happen on the day after we won the election. We said it was a long-term plan. And on page 3, we said, the goal of nation building is a long, and I quote, the goal of nation building is a long time exercise. While we are confident in our ability to make immediate improvements in important areas, we understand that there are no quick fixes to several of the problems facing us. Therefore, in this document, we depart from the practice of presenting a five-year manifesto. We depart from the practice of presenting a five-year manifesto, and instead, we set our long-term goals and objectives for national growth and development. That is what is stated in the blueprint of growth. So when you go all over the country, misleading people in saying that the government is not offering better deals, you are again not speaking the truth. Again, using flashing mirrors. Again, trying to tell solutions what does not exist, even if the reality is telling you right in the face. So, the answer for a better days is not a better day. Better days, a long-term plan, and clearly stated in what the people of St. Lucia selected us to do in November 2011. We never said it would happen right away. Mr. Speaker, we also said in that blueprint of growth that there were serious economic challenges facing the people of St. Lucia because we understood the mess that we would inherit when we go into government. And clearly, on page 5 in the blueprint, on page 5, and I want to quote again on page 5, Mr. Speaker, we said on page 5, serious economic challenges on page 5. The economy of St. Lucia is in its most severe crisis since independence. The reasons are not hard to find. After the general election of 2006, the economy immediately started to contract after several years of solid growth. In the midst of this downward spiral, the global recession hit us with devastating impact. To this day, no one can identify the policies of the government to respond to that crisis. As if all of this was not enough, Hurricane Thomas gave us a lethal blow and left behind a battered infrastructure. We now face a huge construction bill. The crisis that faces us manifests itself in the following ways. That was what we inherited. A dramatic decline in construction activity. A significant decline in government revenues. A marked increase in taxes, duties and levies and fees to bolster falling revenues. A drop in retailing and wholesaling of goods. A huge increase in unemployment, growing from 14% in 2006 to 24.5% in 2011. A total loss of confidence by investors. The virtual collapse of the offshore sector and a marked increase in the cost of living. That is what we inherited in November last year. That is what we inherited. So when we try to ridicule what this government is doing and spread the propaganda of bitter days, the facts are there. That is what we told the people of St. Lucia, and we told the people of St. Lucia that we are going to remedy the situation, and this budget seeks to remedy that situation. Mr. Speaker, this budget is based, as I said, on the framework of optimism. It's a framework which says that despite the precarious situation that we find ourselves, that this government will deal with sensible fiscal consolidation based on the principles of prudence and enterprise. We will not waste. We will not engage in lavish expenditure. We will not buy any more dire malls, but we'll be prudent, but at the same time, we're going to deal with meaningful enterprise. With this mixture of policies, Mr. Speaker, we are going to get to a system of prudence with enterprise. We are going to have enhanced efficiency and control. We're going to ensure that there's stability, transparency, and accountability. A reduction in waste. These massive phone bills, Mr. Speaker, these massive phone bills that some government ministers, through statutory boards or not, expend. During the last period, the waste, we have to curb the waste that took place in government in the last 5 years. Everybody must try, Mr. Speaker. We have to streamline the operations of state-owned enterprises. We have to deal with the situation in Watsco. We have to deal with Watsco, Mr. Speaker. We have to deal with that situation. We cannot just allow it. We need the political will and the political courage to deal with Watsco. We are going to ensure that there is improved tax administration and an improved public debt management framework. That is the difference, Mr. Speaker, between our government, which is the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party, and the government that we inherited on November 20, 2011. Mr. Speaker, the budget as presented by the Prime Minister represents the hopes, the dreams, and the aspirations of St. Lucia. A budget which shall build a more productive economy and a fairer society. A budget aimed at unleashing the creativity of all St. Lucia, but framed within the context of the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Mr. Speaker, to fully appreciate the situation we find ourselves, it is instructive if we reflect on the last 5 years. When we demitted office in 2006, the rate of GDP growth, if you have to look at it on the rebase method, was 12.8% when we demitted office. The following growth rates, 8%, 9.8%, and 5.82% in the preceding years before 2011. During that same period, unemployment was 14%, and there was a consistent recurrent surplus, a surplus on current accounts for each of these years, except the 1 year when there was the situation with 9/11. Plus the fact, Mr. Speaker, there was a robust economy with high rates of domestic and foreign investment. Now, Mr. Speaker, we have regained the seat of government to inherit a deficit on recurrent expenditure. That is what we inherited. That is what the Minister of Finance has to deal with. That is the reality of the situation. And we can blame, we can lie. The situation is we have borrowed to finance our recurrent expenditure. That is what we inherited, Mr. Speaker. We are inheriting unemployment of 21%, and among young people, that unemployment instead could be possibly in some areas as high as 40% in certain areas. That is the unemployment, that is the situation we are inheriting, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, we understand there was Hurricane Thomas, but life existed before Hurricane Thomas. Hurricane Thomas was in the year 2010. There was life before. There was 2007, 2010. So we understand there was Hurricane Thomas. Then the unemployment situation was not better in 2009. It wasn't better. But, Mr. Speaker, we have not got into this situation by accident. We know about the world economic situation. But I'm saying to you, there are certain local situations. And the Prime Minister, he was nice. He said he was not blaming anyone for the current deficit. But he never said that there was no wrongdoing. He never said that there was no wrong policies. He never said that the priorities were not well set. Mr. Speaker, I want to postulate a few reasons why we find ourselves in the mess we are today. The vulgar infighting and power struggles within the UWP, which left the leadership of the government non-functional over an extended period of time, at least 18 months after 2007, that is part of the reason why we are in this situation today. The bad policies, the ill-conceived acquisition of the Bois-d'Orange hypermarket, that as we speak, cost the public of St. Lucia $200,000 a month in interest. Because, Mr. Speaker, you know what $200,000 a month can do for the people of St. Lucia? Think about it. $200,000 a month for interest in a building that we can do nothing with. And the member for Southeast Castries compares it. Instead of saying the people of St. Lucia, through my most grievous fault, he compares it to the Bridge Street Mall. Oh, he doesn't say that? Okay, sorry. Mr. Speaker, the Black Bay land fiasco, and the minister again tries to make excuses, saying flashing mirrors is not 8 million, it's private, putting all of it together. Flashing mirrors. The fact is, Mr. Speaker, we have to spend money for something we do not have. And in these tight days, any money we can save is better. The excess and the wastage throughout the lifespan of the Marigold Housing Project. We've forgotten the Marigold Housing Project. We came in this horrible house, and we said in Marigold we'd have the nicest house in the world. They were boasting, opening their shoulders. Marigold Housing, go up there. How much money was spent in the Marigold Housing Project? That is why we find ourselves in that situation today. It didn't happen by accident. Not only hurricane format or world economic situation. Internal things. Things you did badly that put us in this situation. Mr. Speaker, a refusal to put grant funding into the consolidated fund put us where we are today, because donors may be a little worried, a little concerned that when they give us money, we may not handle it properly. That put us in that situation today. That put us in that situation today. Excess expenditure. And I'm sure the Minister of Tourism will deal with that. Excess expenditure in traveling and other forms of ostentatious patterns. Telephone bills, massive telephone bills. Mr. Speaker, that helped put us in a situation today. The direct interference in the civil service, not allowing civil servants to produce what they're supposed to do and to give proper advice. Fear mongering among the civil service, putting the fear of God in the hearts of civil servants, threatening them, refusing to take their advice, put us where we are today, Mr. Speaker, put us where we are today. Lack of confidence in the country, lack of confidence. Investors had no confidence. Investors did not feel, because several investors have come to give the story of going from one government minister to the other. You have to go there, and unless you clear at least three, you can't get through. At least. Things of confidence. Investors want to know that they have a stable government, they have strong leadership, they have confidence. That was a problem. That put us where we are today. Put us where we are today. We didn't get there by accident. We understand the situation. I heard that the government, when we were in opposition, we never spoke about the Why the Orange Building? The Gaia Mall. We spoke in Parliament volumes about the Gaia Mall, volumes. I remember coming here. I was laughed at because I was on the other side. They laughed at me. If I don't shut my house on TV, they laughed at me. They made all sorts of mockery when we spoke about the Gaia Mall. They laughed. Know what it cost us now? $200,000 a month in interest. And you want to ask, you want to find out. You don't want to find out how you pay. You want to find out who will sell it to. You see where you're headed? Who will sell it to? Never judge us by your own standards, sir. Mr. Speaker, we have to build and restore confidence in St. Lucia. We have to build back the confidence of the people of St. Lucia, of the young people of St. Lucia, of the private sector. We have to bring back the confidence of the foreign investor. We have to do it. Because without confidence, an economy cannot develop. And when we try to divert some serious issues of state, and try to divert it, like the members of this country did a while ago, divert it to all sorts of things, to remove the central problem from the heads of the people. The central problem is we inherited this country with a deficit on current account. The central problem is our national debt is $2.2 billion. The central problem is unemployment is at its highest. The central problem is the road infrastructure. Despite the millions of dollars that we've spent, the road infrastructure is in a mess, and I'm going to get to that later. That is the central problem. These are the problems that we want to discuss in this Honorable House. And these are the problems that the Prime Minister tried to cure, or is trying to cure in a process. He can't cure it in 5 months. He cannot cure it in 5 months. You expect to all the problems in the country to be solved in 5 months. All the problems in the country. But I'll tell you what, the difference between us, and I come back to confidence, there have been no scandals since the new government in 5 months. St. Lucians, home and abroad, when they get up from sleep, they don't get up to say, what happened yesterday? No. That's a difference. That's a central difference. Confidence. Stability in the leadership of the country. A prime minister that has a team of men and women working together to the same objective of developing the country. That is the difference. The basic difference. That's the difference. Throughout the term, Mr. Speaker, we heard about debt. Debt. They came and they told us that debt, that the Labour Party had put the country in debt. Look at the record of debt, the reality. And that's the difference between us. We state the facts. We will not quote from things that don't exist. We will not present figures on PowerPoint presentations that come from nowhere. We're going to give you the facts. Over the past 5 years, the United Workers Party administration borrowed a total of $949 million. If the program debt of $70 million approved by this House in the last session, remember the last session? The last session when we had to take some action because of principle, you know what you did? You borrowed $70 million. That was in November. You borrowed $70 million. And I'll tell you what happened to this later. What happened to that $70 million later? We're coming there soon. If that debt, if we add it, the debt rises to $1.019 million. Billion dollars. In 2000, now let's compare that to what the Labour Party borrowed, the Labour Party government. In 2007, So their party borrowed 144.7 million. In 2008, 160 million. In 2009, 164 million. Yes. Here's what that you borrowed in the years between 2007 and 2011. In 2007, you borrowed 144 million. In 2008, you borrowed 116 million. That was before Hurricane Thomas. Eh? Remember, that was before Hurricane Thomas. Before. In 2009, you borrowed 164 million. In 2010, you borrowed 312 million. And in 2011, you borrowed 211 million. When you inherited government in December 2006, the total public debt was $1.62 billion. 5 years later, it is $2.27 billion. You borrowed 40% of the 2006 figure in 5 years. And you borrowed more before Hurricane Thomas than after Hurricane Thomas. So do not use Hurricane Thomas as an excuse. You borrowed before Hurricane Thomas, you borrowed more than you borrowed after Hurricane Thomas. Where did that money go? I'll tell you where ours went. 5 new secondary schools. The West Coast Road, one of the best roads in the OECD. Borderless prisons. New roads in parts of Grozny, Georgia, etc. January, new roads in that area. That's where the money we borrowed went. 5 new secondary schools. Drainage works in Anserey and January. Police stations, fire stations, HRDCs, all over the country. That's where our money went. Where did yours go? Where did your borrowing go? And not Hurricane Thomas. Where did your borrowing go? And not a world economic recession. Because if you borrow the money, you had it, you could do something with it. So don't talk about the world economic depression will cause you issues probably with your foreign exchange, issues with that kind of thing. But if you borrow the money, you spent it. So you have to show us where did that money go. Mr. Speaker, these were the cards that we were given to play. That is the environment that the people of Tunisia gave us a mandate to run the country. And we are not going to run. We are not, the Prime Minister said clearly that he is not blaming anyone. But the Prime Minister remembers and he knows that there was wrongdoing. There was bad policy. There was poor policy. Decision making was not what it's supposed to be. But Mr. Speaker, the people of the country displayed confidence in us. And these men and women on that side, they are going to rise to the challenge. We are going to rise to the challenge. Mr. Speaker, in that environment of $2.2 billion of debt, unemployment, some cases 40% among young people, the Minister of Finance could choose to look inward. He could recoil into a gesture of austerity. And I know that some singles are saying that we are dealing with expansion and we say things are bad. So I'll deal with that in a while. The Prime Minister could go into a posture of austerity. The Prime Minister could increase taxes. The Prime Minister could become insular. He could retrench public workers. Or he could even cut back drastically on capital expenditure. This was not the position that he took. Instead, he sought to bring the public in his confidence, the private sector, the union, the artists, the unemployed, the young people, both locally, both people, the people in St. Lucia and the people out of St. Lucia. He took them into his confidence and he gave them an opportunity, he's offering an opportunity with the incentives that they are giving to business, etc. But while he's doing that, he reminds them that we are still on a slippery slope. He reminds them that the economy is on a slippery slope. Mr. Speaker, the theory and the policies of the Honorable Minister of Finance, they are not fairy tales. They are based on solid economic facts and economic rationale that has evidence base, which has its bearing in the theories and the member for Miku North, Miku South. Miku North will be well versed in that. Is this in an economic theory of depression economics postulated by the Nobel Prize winner called Paul Krugman? Not about America, sir. And in his most recent book, which is called End This Depression Now, here's what he says, and I quote from the book End This Depression Now. It says, "The boom, not the slum, is the time for austerity. Now is the time for the government to spend more, not less, until the private sector is ready to carry the economy forward again. Yet, job-destroying austerity policies have instead become the rule." But this Minister of Finance is not engaging in job-destroying austerity policies. And that is why we have knives. That is why we have jobs. That is why we have smiles. That's exactly why. Because we do not want to engage in job-destroying austerity policies. But at the same time, we are not encouraging reckless spending. Every member on this side will tell you how we have been instructed to tighten up on our ministries. Everybody on this side, every Monday we had a story. Every Monday. Remind us, nothing luxurious. But while we are in this slippery slope, we need to get involved in fiscal consolidation. And there's only one policy in an entire budget that speaks to fiscal consolidation, and that is the issue of VAT. One policy, one tax measure, one major tax measure that speaks to the policy of consolidation to deal with the deficit on incurred expenditure that you left us, to deal with the $2.27 billion public debt that you left us, to deal with the unemployment situation of 40% that you left us, to deal with the dire mall that you left us, to deal with the black bay land that you left us, to deal with the lack of confidence that you left us, to deal with the problems we have with the Americans, that one major tax policy, one major one. But, Mr. Speaker, again, I want to relate to the Blueprint for Growth on page 13, where we spoke to VAT. And here's what he said about VAT. You know, when they want to tell us that we never spoke about VAT, we attack VAT, the Minister of Finance is correct. VAT has some signs of being an aggressive tax. He's correct. Everybody will tell you that. That's what the Minister of Finance said. But here is what we said about VAT. And those who want to read, let them read. And those who want to speak, let them speak. In a document called the Blueprint for Growth. And here's what we said about VAT. On page 14, you see, Mr. Kavitakashi, 14. No page I can't find. no other option. Our tax base is too small to allow government to provide the services that are demanded. On top of that, the new regional trade agreement will cause us to lose significant import tariff revenues that are currently paid for many of these services. That's what we said to the Public Health Commission. The other countries in the OECS and CARICOM have already faced that reality. The other countries in the OECS and CARICOM have already faced that reality. Saint Lucia cannot continue to hide. That's what we are doing, hiding, dodging, blocking, moving. Saint Lucia cannot continue to hide. Listen, where VAT is concerned, we do not have a choice. We must introduce it. That's what he said to the people of Saint Lucia before election. So do not say, so many people of Saint Lucia believe that we are against VAT. The Prime Minister was against that, Kenny Anthony was against that, and Philip Jacob spoke about that. Here's what we told the people of Saint Lucia about that. That's what we told them. We told them, where that is concerned, we do not have a choice. We must introduce it. Not the way it is us and you. We have confidence in the people of Saint Lucia, and we have the political will to take tough decisions. Because we believe in the people of Saint Lucia. We believe in the greater good. We believe that people will move and people will understand once you explain to them and you're honest with them. That is why we have the guts and the moral authority to implement that on the 1st of December 2012. That is why. And we'll tell the public. Because the public knows and the public voted for us based on the fact that we told them we'll introduce that. These are the facts of the matter as Mr. on that. So, what about that? Saint Lucia is the last country to implement that. Saint Lucians travel, they go to St. Vincent, they go to Dominica, they go to Barbados, they go to the United States, they go to St. Croix, other some of them can go. They go to St. Croix, they go all over. They go all over. They go all over. They know about that. So I believe you can hoodwink them and tell them, Lebanese VAT, bitter days. They understand that. They've been there. They travel. They know the reality. And if they haven't traveled themselves, when they buy things on the net, you see, they tell me on the internet. That is such a dangerous thing. You go in there, and you print in a name, like Guy Joseph, hear everything about him. So Saint Lucia is the last country to implement VAT. But, Mr. Speaker, as soon as VAT is implemented, immediately a few taxes will come out. Immediately. As soon as VAT comes in, a few taxes come out. So don't tell people of Saint Lucia that you have to pay VAT together with other taxes. As soon as VAT comes in, consumption tax out, levy on telephones out, etc. A few taxes leave immediately. As we stated in the blueprint for growth, some goods are going to be exempt. Because we understand the effect it will have on the poor. That's what the Prime Minister was saying in 2007. And we still sit here. We tell the people of Tunisia now confident, but we tell them we have no choice. And we say to them that VAT is, for this economic situation we find ourselves in, VAT is the best fiscal measure we can implement at this time. And we never said that because of VAT, the country will have gold and silver. We never said so. We said VAT is for fiscal funds to help in fiscal consolidation. Because you see, Mr. Speaker, economies do not work on what we think. Economies work on reality. And if we allow ourselves to go down that slippery slope where we have to borrow money for the current expenditure, we are going to find ourselves in a situation where we don't want to get to. So we have the moral fiber and the political will to implement policies of fiscal consolidation. Of course, there must be concerns about that. There must be. It's something new. There must be concerns. That is why you formed the VAT office. You. You don't want to form it, you know. Not me. You. That's why you created the VAT office. But the difference, as I said before, you do not take the people of St. Lucia in your confidence. You don't speak to them in a rational way. You do not tell them exactly what are the facts. So you form the VAT office, but last week your press used to tell them, resist VAT. You open up, you. That's the flashing mirrors you get involved in, you know. These are the flashing mirrors. So you set up your VAT office, but you tell us now, resist VAT, resist VAT. So in one hand, you can't avoid VAT. In the next hand, resist VAT. Who is talking? Who is speaking? Of course, there are some concerns. The hotel sector has some concerns. The hospitality has some concerns. And that is why the Minister of Finance will discuss with the hotel sector and take the appropriate decision as they relate to the hotel sector. The hotel sector has some concerns. We admit it. But we are going to take, after discussion, we are going to deal with the concerns of the hotel sector. Businesses have some concerns. The major concern of the business, of businesses, particularly the supermarket business, is what do you do with the existing stock? That's a major concern. Do you understand that? But you know what we'll do? We'll talk to them. We'll come to a mutually accepted solution. Because we understand we have some concerns. We're not going to hide away and blame and say, it's not me, oh, not me, then, it's not me. We're going to face the challenge. We're going to speak to the businesses and we're going to tell them what is the plan for the stock we have in hand. And we are going to find a solution to this problem. There are going to be some ceasing and implementation problems in VAT all over the world. Why are we so scared? Why don't we have confidence in our people? Why don't we think our people can understand? Why don't we think our people can understand what's happening? There are going to be some problems. Some teething problems. That is why we are ensuring that there is enough public relations. There is enough discussion. There is enough dialogue. There is enough compromise. Because you know. So, as most things, as the Minister for Super says, in the early stages, there is a problem. But it will settle out. It will balance out itself. It happened all over the world. Why do you think solutions are the only people who can't exist in a VAT regime? Why do you think so? Why are you bringing solutions down? Why are you making them believe that they are the last in the pack? Why do you do that? Don't do that to them. They deserve better. Don't do it. You understand? With the implementation of VAT, there are going to be other measures to impact on the VAT. Apart from the exempt goods, there are going to be zero return goods. But there's also going to be an increase in the tax threshold. We're going to increase the tax threshold by $1,000. So it will take 500 people out of the tax regime. And they will have more money to spend. But not only the people who come out, the people who get bigger salaries will get a relief too. Because when you work your tax, you have an exempt part of your tax that's exempt. So everybody, if you're getting less than $18,000 a month, you'll pay no tax. If you get more than $18,000 a month, you're going to pay tax after you've subtracted the $18,000. So everybody will get a relief, and everybody is going to get an increased in their disposable income, some higher than others. But why is he doing that? And I heard the members of this country, the member who had the administration of WASCO for 5 years, come to this honorable house and speak about disconnection of WASCO. Let me explain to you what the Prime Minister said. Well, he can explain very well for himself. But I think that, you see, WASCO, there are illegal disconnections. WASCO...
Honorable Member, you have 15 minutes remaining to conclude your contribution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Mr. Speaker, WASCO is not like Lucilec. You see, Lucilec can disconnect you much easier because they can see the light. Low power pay light. Lucilec can wear it. But with WASCO, it's different, comrade. It's different. WASCO is different. It's more difficult to find them. So what do? You spend money, transactions cost, in employing people to go and find a man that's got a bonus for $14, or you have an amnesty and start afresh. Which is better? Which one is better? Apart from that, we also removed earlier all taxes and fines on income tax arrears to create more money, to put more money in the system. So while we implementing that, we are creating, and that's all in the name of fiscal consolidation. Mr. Speaker, I could speak about NICE and about SMILE and about the job creation, but my colleagues have done that. But I want to deal a little with the Ministry of Infrastructure. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Infrastructure was the former Ministry of Communications and Information. And Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Infrastructure is charged with the responsibility, as stated in the blueprint of growth, of developing a modern, affordable, and resilient infrastructure that can support our social and economic development. The Ministry, Mr. Speaker, expects to fulfill this mandate using the principle of integrity, equity, fairness. These are the basic principles under which we will conduct the Ministry of Infrastructure. And key among these principles is the principle of transparency. Transparency in contracts, transparency in the award of contracts, transparency in the analysis of contracts, transparency in the costing of contracts. That's key, transparency. We need to be able to find that if a contract was given to Company A, and another one was given to Company M, that Company A did not have an unfair advantage on Company M. You know how we'll do that? We'll do that for a tender process. We'll allow open and free tender. We'll put an end. Now listen to me carefully, because there you have a way of misquoting me. Listen to me carefully. We are not saying that we are going to do away with direct purchase. Because the bonds are bridged, you must give it a direct purchase. So you need to get it done. Yes, we may give it a direct purchase. So you need to get it done. But listen, the Minister of Finance may. The Minister of Finance may. I didn't say shout. But listen to the history of direct purchase. In the year 2011, we gave $59 million worth of direct purchase. $59 million. And in the last 3 months, between September and November, we gave $49,563,594 of direct purchase. We gave direct purchase on the 20th of November, 2011. And if you want the evidence, I will give it to you. They, well, not we, they, the government. The government at the time. $39 million worth of direct awards in the 3 months before the election. 3 months. We gave a direct award to the Silda River on the 20th of November. Election 28. That will not happen. And it's a pity, I don't have the time to tell you about the direct purchase. Statue of these 16 direct awards. 16. Pity, I don't have the time. Now, in terms of what these direct awards were given to, we'll do that in another time, another place. Klein of Slide, $3 million of direct awards. Distilton, $4 million of direct awards. Anyhow. Mr. Speaker, so in this new ministry, direct awards are going to be, the Prime Minister, the Minister of Finance, will allow direct awards when they are absolutely necessary. Because you understand that there are instances when you must give direct awards. We are going to have a clear criteria for the evaluation of tenders based on the capacity of the tender. So, all in a sudden, a man will not just appear with a company and he have contracts. Men come from nowhere. Men who owned, who did all kind of things before. All in a sudden, people called John Doe got contracts. In the records of the Ministry of Infrastructure, there is a contract for a gentleman called John Doe. And his telephone number is 00000. That will not happen. And you see, these things, Mr. Speaker, may sound funny, but that's what put us where we are today. That's what put us in the 2.2, because that money for direct purchase and direct award didn't come from anywhere. It's the money we borrowed, comrades. It's the money that we borrowed. That's what's there. Plus the fact, I have some correspondence, I can make it a document of the House, from a friendly government that gave $3 million for this building. The Ministry of Infrastructure has no idea where was this building or what was the first $3 million. I don't know, comrade. The government of Taiwan gave $3 million for the silting of rivers. That money did not pass through the coffers, did not pass through the Ministry of Communication. That's a fact. And if you want, we can make the letter a document of the House. Further, so, we are speaking about transparency. We're going to deal with a combination of open tender and pre-selection. So contractors will have to give what is called a statement of capability. And we understand that some people are going to have an unfair start, an unfair advantage. So we have to find ways to bring these contractors up to speed. And that is why, very, very shortly, the ministry will begin a system of education and re-education and re-engineering for the contractors of this country. Because we have to bring them up to speed. They have to bring them up to speed. Because what exists? If I have to list to you, and I will not do that, the contractors who flourish, you will see it's a small minority. And what happened? The Minister of South East Cassius is not lying. In one quarter, They took $2.8 million and divided it in three canals, $10,000. In one quarter, $2.8 million of allocation was broken up into $10,000 contracts in one quarter. $2.8 million. That's where John Doe comes through. That's the reality. That is why we are here today. I'm not telling tales out of school. I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm not going to know which one. You never heard me talk about it before. But today, we're talking about $2.2 billion of debt. So I have to tell the people of Telusha what may have led us into a debt situation. You mean to tell me, one quarter, $2.8 million of less than $10,000 contract? How can you control? How can you have possible control if you have in the country with your staff $2.8 million of $10,000 contract? How can you control it? Mr. Speaker, so these principles of transparency, and you see, the reason why it's important for you to be transparent, because the Ministry of Infrastructure deals with a lot of money. It's a lot of money. We deal with bridges, $3 million. The Bonta Bridge costs $3 something million. So another thing in terms of transparency, they direct the design, build and finance project that the Prime Minister spoke of. The Prime Minister was clear that when we are getting involved in this project, we are going to put it to open tender. We're going to make it a process that is transparent. People can tender. You cannot, will not go into the business of going to design, finance, and build projects if there's not proper analysis, if there's not a proper background check on the person who is doing that investment. We have to do it.
So when we go in there, Honourable Member, you have 5 minutes left to conclude your contribution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry also tried to have improved asset management, improved project management, and as I said before, we are going to build the capacity of the private sector. Mr. Speaker, a caller on the radio one day said what was new in the Ministry. And as the member for South Africa, he said, we changed doorknobs. We didn't change doorknobs, we just changed one lock. Didn't change any doorknob. But I'll tell you what, Mr. Speaker. What we've done is we've taken the staff of the Ministry into our confidence. We said to them, you are engineers, you are technicians, regardless of your political affiliation. Gone are the days when officers used to be called into the minister's office, I mention nobody's name, and say, I know you're not supporting me. That was the terrorism that was practiced in some places. Why do you call a stupid and tell a stupid servant, I know you're not supporting me? You can't tell a stupid servant that. A stupid servant is protected by the Constitution. So, first thing I said to my stupid servant in the Ministry is, all of you are here and not supporting me. Because I expect that, but I ask them to be professional. And I can tell you, I have the full cooperation of all the staff in the Ministry of Infrastructure. And I thank them for that. You saw them on Wednesday in the rain. Today, they were in the rain. They're going to be in your constituency later. They're working. Because you know what? They have a goal and they have a mission to improve the infrastructure of solution. And I want to thank them for that. Thank the Permanent Secretary. And thank all of them. Because they have put Solution first. They have risen to the challenge that the Prime Minister is speaking about. They've risen to the challenge. And I can tell you, when we come here next year, we are going to report an improved ministry and an improved infrastructure in the country. Mr. Speaker, I stand to give full support to the policy statement, and I'm sure that with the will of the people of Telusha, and before I end, I want to thank the people of Kashi East. Tell me, Mr. Speaker, they had planned to dance on my head, you know. They had crates of alcohol, and if you see ham and cake and things, By the road, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry. Mr. Speaker, but you know what? You know what the people did? They tripled my majority. And I thank them for that. I thank them, Mr. Speaker.
For gas relief and Deputy Prime Minister Philip Chepier, who's also the Minister for Infrastructure, Water Services and Transportation.